Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Postpartum Therapist Podcast. Today, I have a special guest. Her name is Kay. She is one of my closest friends and somebody that had a huge influence in my life, and I'm so thankful for her. So today, we're going to talk a lot of things about in the hospital setting. She works in the high-risk postpartum unit, so she is a nurse, and then she's going to give her own experience about postpartum depression, having twins, being on bed rest, everything. So Kay, welcome. Could you introduce yourself?
Hi, thanks, Jasmine. So yes, my name is Kay, and I've been friends with Jasmine since our college days in 2006. We went to college together and have stayed close ever since. But I am currently working at a hospital going on 10 years now in a high-risk postpartum unit and OBGYN and breast, and have truly enjoyed working where I am.
And you are the mother of how many?
Yes, I have 4 children. I have two twin boys that are 8 and a daughter that is 5 and another daughter that is 2.
Awesome. So Kay, could you, because I'm still learning what this means, could you kind of let us know who would be somebody that might go to a high-risk postpartum unit? What type of diagnosis or issues, what type of patient is being seen there?
So typically someone who may have higher blood pressures and need to be monitored more closely on a special medication like magnesium sulfate, or a patient who has trouble regulating her blood sugar and needs to be on a special medication like insulin. But they have all still had babies, so you know, it's still the same postpartum care as other patients, but they just have a couple extra risk factors and things going on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because when I hear postpartum, I'm thinking, how far postpartum are most of your patients? Is it, you know, they just had their baby and they're still in the hospital, or is it, you know, a couple months down the road? What's your typical patient? How far postpartum are they?
Yeah, so they are coming up from labor and delivery after having their baby, and then they're on our unit until they go home, so 2 to 3 days.
Okay, so yeah, not what I was thinking then. I was thinking, like, you know, complications, because we talk about, you know, a lot of people not following up with care because maybe embarrassment or kind of like, oh, no big deal, everything's fine. And then later on, you know, maybe weeks later or months later, they're like, oh, maybe I should have went and followed up with that. But so your patients typically are just right after labor and delivery.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Now, I know you had briefly mentioned, and we talk about in the book, like screening patients as much as you can. So would these patients get the Edinburgh when they're in your care?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you administer that? How does that go in the hospital setting?
Typically, it would be one of the nurses that would hand that and explain and educate the patient on what to do with that, along with some other admission paperwork, you know, like a feeding and diapering chart and welcome to our unit, that type of welcome info.
Okay, so you would be one of those nurses, right?
Right.
You would be one of them. So kind of tell me, so they score, you know, they fill out the Edinburgh, you take it back and review it. What type of patient would maybe get follow-up treatment after filling up their Edinburgh, or maybe a follow-up consult? Do you guys do, you know, based on the number, or do you kind of, oh, I forget what question it is, but, you know, obviously I know if they say anything about, like, you know, wanting to die or whatnot, that is probably an automatic referral. But what do you guys look for?
Right. So typically we want to screen our patients, and depending, well, I mean, really anyone who, whether you get a score of 0 or, in the 20s, everyone needs to have that education on postpartum depression, because it certainly won't or doesn't affect everyone in the hospital setting right away. So if, many patients score lower on the scale, we'll still give them that education piece. But if you score a certain number, then we will typically consult a medical social worker, and then they will come and see the patient as well, just to make sure that they feel supported and have their resources and such.
Okay, so Kay, tell our guest what got you into, mom, baby, labor and delivery, this population.
Well, when I was in college, I had a rotation on this specific unit, and completely fell in love with it and knew that's where my heart wanted to be. We have such a diverse population, and I truly enjoy working with all different types of women, with, their different diagnosis, and have truly enjoyed that, and still think it. I consider myself lucky that I do have my dream job. And I had worked there for only a year and a half, I believe, before my boyfriend at the time and I had gotten pregnant with the twins, Lucas and Vincent. And even though I had a little experience on that unit, helping women take care of their bodies postpartum and their brand new babies and helping them bottle feed and change diapers, it still didn't prepare me for what was going to be our life when we got pregnant with the boys. Aaron was still in school and I was living at home with my parents, and it was very exciting, but also very scary. I felt like I had let my parents down in many ways, my family down, and myself. We weren't ready. It wasn't planned, but it was wonderful, and just to be able to grow, two tiny humans and have incredible support from both of our families. And then pregnancy for the first 18 to 20 weeks was absolutely miserable. I was extremely, extremely nauseous and had missed quite a few days of work and had to get on a medication, Zofran, just to get through life, basically. It was quite miserable. But then once the nausea went away, it was wonderful. Wonderful to see my body change and feel them inside moving. And then, let's see, we were about 27 weeks pregnant and I started going into preterm labor. So then I was put on to bed rest, and that was, it was pretty depressing, to be honest. I had to completely stop work and literally just on my parents' couch watching Lifetime movies, which got old very, very fast. My mom was such a blessing. She literally made me the most nutritious meals, snacks, and shakes, and spent so much time with me. And Aaron was still going to school, so he would be with me when he could, but it was in the summer and everyone was, vacationing and living their best life. And I just laid on the couch and grew these two tiny humans and tried to figure out, you know, where we were going to put their cribs in this house with my parents and what life was going to be like. And then at about 32 weeks, I went into labor again, but this time pretty intense, and had to be hospitalized on the OB special care unit, meaning that I was basically monitored twice a day, making sure that that I wasn't going to have the twins super early. So we were there for a couple weeks, and I felt so supported and loved by my work family. They would come and visit me, and my mom and sister and Aaron would come and stay with me. But once again, it was just scary not knowing what was going to happen if these boys were born early. I also live an hour away from where I work and where I would deliver the babies. So everyone had to drive an hour just to come and stay with me. And then if I went home, you know, what if something happened? I was an hour away from the hospital, and it was just nerve-wracking, and once again would feel, even though I know I was supported and loved, it was also scary and many times felt alone there. But thankfully, I was able to go home after about a week, and they said that I could just, you know, stay on bed rest and would deliver about 36 weeks. So then at 35 weeks, my water broke, and it was about 3 a.m, and I woke Aaron up and said, "It's time, we gotta go." So we drove to the hospital and made it there, and we had the boys, and it was a wonderful experience. We knew we would have to have a C-section because Lucas was breech from the beginning, and so I knew that was coming. Thankfully, that wasn't a surprise or a shock like to many women, and we had it was wonderful. I had my coworkers take care of me, and you know, I had this strict vision in my mind that I was going to breastfeed both of these boys, and it was going to be wonderful and easy and natural. And of course, you know, they ended up, you know, coming at 35 weeks, so they would not suck at all. So I literally was attached to a breast pump for 3 weeks before they would even suck. And then I got an infection in the hospital, and we ended up staying a week. After 24 hours, their blood sugars were finally done, but of course one of their bilirubins was elevated, and I remember the doctor saying, "You're gonna have to supplement, you need to give them formula, because their bilirubin is high, their weight loss is high." And I just remember being so tired and heartbroken that I wasn't going to be able to breastfeed these babies, and I had to give them formula. This wasn't part of the plan. My infection wasn't part of the plan. But we made it. We were ready to discharge. I was pumping, actually, you know, able to produce breast milk and give that first. But we were ready to go home, and we were going home to my parents' house, and it was such a blessing, but it was also just so many things happening, so many people all at once, and it was almost like an out-of-body experience. You know, it was like, okay, I'm in charge of these two lives, and you know, Aaron just graduated and was, you know, in hopes to find a job. There's just, how long were we going to live here? Is it okay that I let my mom help me with so much? When are these babies ever going to breastfeed? there was just so much going on, so much emotion, and super overwhelming for both Aaron and I. But how could we show any feelings of that? Because we just had these two beautiful boys, you know, that didn't need to stay in the NICU, and you know, wonderful supportive family on both sides. But it was a lot. So I definitely feel like I did have some postpartum depression, and I think I was too scared to talk about it with anyone, because, you know, I was a nurse that worked on a postpartum floor, and I should know what to expect and not worry about these feelings. But it was a lot. And I don't want to say it wasn't all wonderful, but there were many, many challenging days and challenging times that, you know, I probably should have talked to someone other than my mom or Aaron. So yeah, that's the birth and postpartum in a couple minutes.
Yeah. So if I can ask you this, because I talk about it, you know, in my book, and thank you so much for being one of the first people to read it for me and give me feedback. I talk about how for me, there wasn't a true realization till about a year postpartum. Were you aware, or was it something that it was like after some time had passed that you're like, oh, that's what that was?
Yeah, it was definitely like time had passed before I even wanted to like share those feelings. I think I just felt like I just have to have myself together. I have to, I was so busy just in like the daily of, okay, you have to feed these boys, you have to change their diapers, you have to nap, you have to bathe them, you have to, don't forget to feed yourself. That it just, I kind of just suppressed those feelings, and, you know, just, you got to get this done. You got to, these boys depend on you. There's no time for you to have these feelings.
Yeah, and I feel like I could relate to, you know, you had said earlier, but I'm a nurse and I work in this field and I should know. And I kind of feel like, okay, I'm a therapist trained in treating postpartum mood disorders, or, you know, commonly referred to as perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. And I was, you know, aware that it could happen. I was even more aware because I have a history of anxiety. So I was like, look out for this, Jasmine. I even told, you know, Andy, my husband, like, hey, I'm at risk for this. Look out for this. And despite all the knowledge, you know, it still was hidden from me for a year, you know. And so I feel like that's kind of something that can happen that is also not expected. And, you know, I've talked about, you know, to you and with other people, kind of how are different people missed? How are we slipping through the cracks? And I think you bring up a good point, is that the daily life is so demanding that emotions take, you know, a backseat, or, you know, back row, or whatever, however you want to say it, to what's priority in the day. And the priority is keeping you and your babies alive, right? And so I think that that makes so much sense, that it's like a lot of times as moms, we're not even aware, because we're like, hold on. Okay, basic needs, right? Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like sleep, water, food, right? And that's kind of our focus.
Yes, absolutely.
So if you were to go back, what would you say your specific symptoms were? You know, I have already talked to, you know, one of our close friends, Megan, she talked about different things that she could go back and say would be symptoms. If you were to go back, what would your symptoms look like that, you know, maybe in Edinburgh wouldn't pick up on, or maybe, you know, even just somebody in your personal life wouldn't have noticed?
Oh gosh. I think I was definitely more anxious, but didn't necessarily show it, I don't think. But OCD, as far as, you know, making sure the boys had enough breast milk, was that diaper rash not normal, making sure I was changing them often, and then I was super protective over them, and I still am, and I've shared that with you, Jazz, about how I just have just issues, you know, like leaving them alone in other people's care, and you know, are they being held the right way, are they getting fed the right way, just certain things like that, but you know, would kind of obsess on that. But I like I specifically remember, like, I lost my baby weight so fast. Like, I was not eating near as what I should have. Like, it just wasn't on my mind. You know what I mean? I never felt myself hungry. Like, I was constantly just doing something, you know, with the boys and, you know, I am a woman that loves to eat and enjoy my snacks and my sweets, but it was just crazy how I literally lost that weight within like 2 weeks, Jasmine. And I don't think it flagged to my family because there was so much emphasis on, oh, well, you're breastfeeding too, like you're burning calories, and you know, that's got to be normal. I don't think anyone really realized that, okay, she's not eating nearly as what she should be. Because I just wasn't focusing on that. I had no appetite. My brain just wasn't there. So that was definitely out of the norm, as well.
And I remember you showed me a picture actually recently. And do you know what I'm talking about? Do you know what I'm going to say? Where you're like, Jazz, that's PPD right there. Do you know the picture that I'm talking about?
Yes, I was, one of the boys was, were they in a boppy pillow? And I was just laying next to them on the floor.
Right, yeah.
And there was no expression on my face.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That first, and looking, like, it, once the boys were able to breastfeed, like, actually latch, and I wasn't, and that was, there, I didn't have to supplement, that's when I truly felt like I was bonding with them, and I felt like I was taking better care of myself, which, I mean, wasn't until like the second month, like month number two. That definitely a lot of signs within that first month of coming home, for sure.
So, okay, tell us what it felt like. I know you wanted to breastfeed so bad. So what did the first month feel like? You know, bottle feeding them with formula, or if you had, you know, supplement. What did that feel like for you?
I just remember crying, like, anytime I had to wash those pumping parts. I, you know, with the girls, like, there was, sometimes when I'm at work, like, I will pump and just throw my parts in my cooler and put it in the refrigerator, and I don't wash them until I get home. There just wasn't any of that. And I know technically, like, that's not, I'm not encouraging that, because that's not,
hey, this is, you know, a safe place. This is a safe place.
I know that's not standard, but I just wish there would have been, like, I just wish, looking back, like, I could have given myself so much grace, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's why I'm asking you, you know, because there are people that feel how you felt, and then there's other people that don't feel that. You know, there's other people that are just like, please give me the ticket to say formula and then make the decision for me, you know, because I didn't really want to do this to begin with, but I felt this like societal pressure, like, give me the ticket, give me the pass, right? And then there's people that like want to do that so badly where it feels not fair that something that should be so natural is just taken from them. And it is hard.
Yes, that's exactly how I felt. I just like depressed and frustrated, like why wasn't my body making enough milk yet? And why do I have to wash these dang pumping parts at 3 a.m. while everybody else sleeps? You know, for my babies not even be able to latch. Ugh, it was so frustrating.
So
I felt like my body was just failing me.
And was there anything that brought you any comfort, or what did that just come, you know, with the second month when you got the latch and more milk production?
During those first couple of weeks, I just remember like my mom and Aaron were so supportive when it came to breastfeeding, and I remember just laying there in bed and my mom and Aaron were just like, let's just let her sleep and we'll feed the babies this time. Cause they had literally looked at me and said, okay, do you want to feed them or do you want to give them formula? And I like looked at them and I couldn't even answer. I just felt like so numb.
That breaks my heart.
It's so hard.
I know, and I know if you were hearing another mom say this, I just know your personality. You just want to, like, wrap them up in your arms and just be like, it's okay, you know?
Oh, my gosh. And I, like, when I have, you know, twin mamas are, like, so special in my heart. But anyone who, like, wants to breastfeed and, like, has to get formula for weight loss or increased bilirubin or a low blood sugar, like, I always say, like, you know, this might be too much information, but I have to tell you, like, my boys were born at 35 weeks and I could not get them to latch for like 3 weeks, but that breast pump was attached to me for, for 3 weeks. And I tell you, I'm going to have the next Michael Jordan because my Vincent Nursley was 5 and Lucas Nursley was 2. So please, like, don't let this be the end all be all. You know, if this is something that you really want to do, you can do it. And I feel like, I think I just get so emotional because when I come out of it, we came out of it because it's so much more than just myself. It was just so successful. And then it was just so passionate to me. You know, whereas before that year that I was at work and had never breastfed a baby, never tried, had never been pregnant, it was just like, okay, your baby either latches or they don't, you know? And it was just a huge changing point for me, and probably to the point where I just became obsessed with it. Because it was like my own personal success story, you know, and now I felt like my babies truly, truly loved me, even though, you know, you're just looked as a food source in the beginning. But it was a game changer for me, and not everybody has that, you know, it doesn't come for every woman. But that's definitely something that helped. My postpartum depression was when I was able to bond with my babies like that, because that first month was so rough.
Well, and you talk about, you know, a success for you, and you know me, I was just like, formula, breastfed, I don't care. And then when I found out Harper had a cleft, and one of the first things I found out was like, you know, really don't plan on breastfeeding. Likelihood of her latching probably slim to none. And that like ignited this fire in me that was like, bullshit, like, you gonna challenge me? You gonna challenge me for real? And so when she was born, I was like, okay, you know, still they're you know, they're the experts, I'll take what they say, I'll listen. They said your baby's not going to be able to breastfeed, most likely not. So keep that in your pocket. But at the same time, I was like, but let's just see. And, you know, in the hospital, I was at a smaller hospital, so I think there's only 12 beds there. But they were all filled by the time that, you know, Harp was born, my first. And out of all 12 of us, they said Harper was latching the best. And she had her little cleft. And I was like, mic drop. Right? I was like, okay. And not because I cared so much about breastfeeding. It was right, more, yeah. Well, you know me. Like, I'm like weirdly competitive, right? Like, I wouldn't play sports, but there's like, you know, baby shower games. I'm going to get competitive. Tell me my baby can't nurse. I'm going to get competitive, right? So as soon as she was latching, that's when I became obsessive, because I'm like, oh shit, now there's no excuse to not breastfeed because you have a cleft baby that can latch. You can't really make an excuse. And I think that's kind of what started some obsessiveness for me of like, you can do this, most people can't, so you're going to do it beautifully and you're going to do it no matter what the risk is, you know. Mm-hmm. And it made me lose a lot of weight too. I think I was back down to even like middle school weight by the first month, which was crazy. But, you know, looking back, maybe I wasn't eating and didn't realize it. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I feel like when you're faced with a hardship with breastfeeding and then you can do it, I think there is like a competitive nature or obsessive, whichever word you want to use, once you get successful at it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's late here in Michigan for us folk. I have three questions that I ask each of my guests, just to kind of, because I want overall, you know, this podcast to bring support and help to somebody, even if it's just one person. So I'm going to ask these three questions and hopefully somebody can use it. So if you were to look back, and you can look back at any pregnancy, it doesn't have to be just with the twins, what would you say overall was most supportive to you as a postpartum mom?
As a postpartum mom, the most supportive. Oh, gosh.
Like, what was most helpful? You know, what made your day a little bit easier?
Gosh, to be honest, with all of them, just the wonderful meals.
Yeah.
It was such like a weight lifted off my shoulders. I remember living with my parents after the boys, my mom would just constantly, she's such a servant. Like, she just would make sure that she always had something, you know, she always had something made and never made me feel guilty about leaving a dish or not picking up after myself or something, which was amazing. And then after Genevieve, when we were, in our own house and married, it was the wonderful support and meals that were brought from my family and Aaron's family. And after Audra was born, there was just one specific meal that the boys were in preschool, and they went to school with a little girl and just had connected really closely, and they were their mother was just, she's just an amazing woman, and you know, barely knew each other, but when Audra was born, she texted me and said, hey, I'd love to bring you a meal. And she brought us a meal, and it was like this wonderful homemade chicken pot pie, but also with a bouquet of flowers and this little personalized cake that had Audra's name on it.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh,
I know. I still get emotional like every time I think of it. It was just so sweet.
Well, I feel like it's the most, right. And it's like the most simple gestures during, you know, when you get home that make the world of difference. It doesn't have to be big gestures. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it was just so, it was just so thoughtful, you know, and just kind.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, it's really sweet. Sorry. Also, been a long day.
Oh my gosh. Tears are welcome here.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, let me ask you this. What would you say you do today to continue to take care of yourself?
Okay, well, you know, Jazz, that I have tried to give myself more me time now. I never did that with the boys, or really Genevieve, just because I felt like I had to be there for everything, and I had to make sure, you know, I was being the best mom I could be and never leaving them except when I had to go to work. And, you know, you know, I'm so thankful for my friends, because geez Louise, not even drinking over here.
And I even told you to get wine before this.
I know. My gosh. I truly put, like, everyone, all my friends on the back burner, because it's like I had to give, you know, all myself to the kids.
Well, and I think to your defense too, you know, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You were one of the first, right? You were one of the first to have kids. And I feel like hindsight's 20/20, right? Because I think at the time I thought I was being a really good friend. And looking back, I'm like, I asked her to meet me somewhere at like 2 o'clock with twins. Like, what? You know, and I know that you don't have to have kids to understand. But I think there is a new level of understanding once you have kids. And you're like, me, I'm a mom now. Like, even though my kids are 2 and almost 4, like, we don't mess up nap time. Sorry. Like, we don't do it in our house unless you're going to be here at bedtime. We don't mess up nap time, right? So I think to your defense, you had a lot of friends that were still in the fun stage. And so we probably couldn't be as accommodating as we thought we were.
Well, and I felt so guilty for, you know, I didn't want to say like I didn't care about our friendships, but I had kids, like I had to give them everything and give them all my time. And, but now, to truly answer your question, now you know, I missed out on so many girls' trips in 9 years. I feel like within the past couple of years, I've been able to just tell myself, like, the kids are going to be fine with Aaron, or grandma and grandpa while you go, you know, spend a night or have a girls' weekend in Big Rapids, or, you know, a couple hours at Jill's house. It's going to be fine. But I still, you know, I still have anxiety over that anytime I leave them, and something that I'm trying to work on continuously. But it's something that I've worked on, but I feel like I'm getting better on.
I would say you are. We had a great time in Big Rapids.
Thanks, Jess.
I mean, if anybody's listening and wants to go to Big Rapids, Michigan, just please get prepared. It's not a big city. It's very small, but you can have a good time there if you put your mind to it. And we had a great time.
but you have to bring your own tubes. The sawmill is closed.
Yeah.
And River Rock is no more. It's the gypsy nickel.
Yeah. So if you want to go float down a river, go to Walmart and get your tube. And then if you want to dance, you're going to have to go to a place called Shooters. Was it Shooters? Yeah, Shooters.
Yeah. Yep. Still Shooters.
Still Shooters. And you might have to enjoy just dancing by yourself and your friends that you bring. Unless college is in session. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm so excited for this question because I don't think we've given you enough credit for how much of a compassionate soul you are. I feel like if any listener goes to your hospital, and we won't say the name of your hospital, and has you as a nurse, they're going to feel your love. And I've told you time and time again, you just have a natural way of making people feel loved and accepted. And it's not like, I don't know what it is. It's not like you do anything special. You know, you're just there, you're just present, and you're, you know, you're not judgmental. And so I'm really excited for this answer because of how loving you are. So as a mom of four, as a mom that has experienced, you know, maybe some anxiety, some depression, moving forward, what advice would you have for a new mom, somebody that's pregnant, somebody that's struggling? What would your advice be?
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, definitely find someone you can trust to just be vulnerable with. And don't keep anything inside, because it just builds up, you know? And yeah, gosh, it's okay to ask for help. I wish I would have, I wish I could just go back and just be vulnerable and say, I need help.
You know? Anything. Yeah.
Yeah, just if you can just, and if you don't have a good support person or there's so many support groups out there. Even I know you have to be careful of some moms groups online, but there are support groups that meet like in person, just to be able to just to talk about how you're feeling. Because I know in your book, Jazz, you had discussed like pregnancy is not not looked at the same by everybody. You know, I have a friend that despises being pregnant. She hates how her body looks. She hates how she feels. And just to be able to talk with someone and be vulnerable that I don't like what my body is going through. And just to be able to talk about it.
Yeah, and I think that's so important for, you bring up a good point, and I think I talk about it in my book, is you don't have to have a big support network. If you can just have one person you can be truly vulnerable with, 100% honest with. I mean, I've had to tell my support people, like, I have to put this baby down because I don't know if I'm going to hurt her. You know, and for my support people to say, hey, good job. Or, you know, to say, yep, I punched a wall today. And my support people to say, hey, you didn't punch your baby, so you're fine. Right. You know, to have somebody just say, to make you not feel crazy or to make you feel, you know, heard. It doesn't have to be a whole group. It can just be one person. And that's what I want for any mom. It's just one person. Like, if you can't tell that, if you think you have a support person, and Meg and I joked about this too, but I got to say it again. If you think a person is your support person, ask yourself, if you shit your pants today, would you tell them? And if your answer is no, then you got to keep looking, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I mean, that's a true test, isn't it?
Yes, for sure.
So, okay. Well, thank you so much, Kay. I am so appreciative for you and thankful for you, and I appreciate your time. If anybody has any questions or a story to share, like I've said before, please email postpartumtherapist@gmail.com. Please look at our other episodes for different experiences from other moms. There will be more to come. Thank you so much for your time. And Kay, I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Jazz. Thank you for everything. Your book is amazing, and I just love your passion for this topic and your desire to help so many people, including myself.
You're very sweet. You're one of my favorite people. I love you.
I love you too.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.